Viragaha. Detached. Vina. By which?
Purushaha.
A person.
Bhagavan.
My dear Lord.
Sarvataha.
Completely.
Bhavet.
May become.
Achakshva.
Please describe.
Jiva Lokasya.
For the people in general.
Vivida.
Manifold.
Mama.
For myself.
Samsrutihi.
Repetition of birth and death. Also repetition of this microphone keeps falling. Anyway, maybe by next time I come they can have a better system. It's okay. Let's tighten it up. Ooh, it's strong. All right, let's try it now. Maybe you put a weight at the end. If he makes it shorter, then I'm going to have to go over to here. Okay. Yeah, if you put it, hang your bead bag at the end. I'll tell you, that's the secret. Let's make it longer. Here's a secret. Does anyone have a bead bag here? Anyone chant Hare Krishna?
No.
Hang the bead bag at the end. No, don't tighten it. Just leave it. Put the bead bag at the end, the very end. Good. One more bead bag. Oh, no, this is it. This is work. It's working. Otherwise, one more bead bag. Otherwise, it'll go the other direction. Yeah. Great. See? That's the secret. The bead bags. Okay. Translation. Devahuti continued. My dear Lord, please also describe in detail, both for me and for people in general, the continual process of birth and death. For by hearing of such calamities, we may become detached from the activities of this material world. So, purport by Zamangari, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Jai. In this verse, the word Song Shrutihi is very important. Shreya Shruti means the prosperous path of advancement towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Song Shruti means the continued journey on the path of birth and death towards the darkest region of material existence. People who have no knowledge of this material world, God, and their actual intimate relationship with Him are actually going to the darkest region of material existence in the name of progress and the material advancement of civilization. To enter the darkest region of material existence means to enter into a species of life other than the human species. Ignorant men do not know that after this life, they are completely under the grip of material nature and will be offered a life which may not be very congenial. Here, how a living entity gets at different kinds of bodies will be explained in the next chapter. This continual change of bodies in birth and death is called samsara. Devahuti requests her glorious son, Kapila Muni, to explain about this continued journey to impress upon the conditioned souls that they are undergoing a path of degradation by not understanding the path of bhakti yoga or devotional service. Okay. Vivrago yena purusho bhagavan sarvato bhavet achakshva jiva lokasya vividam mama sangshutahi. So, Om Ganati Madandasha Ganjana Shalakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, the calamities in this material world are described by Krishna in the Gita. He says, Janma Mitu Jara Vyaladi Dukha Doshana Darshanam. That you're always going to see these things. What is that? Janma? That's birth, Mitu, death, Jara. And then old age. You're always going to see these things in this world. And the most wonderful thing is we think they're not going to happen to us. That's described in the Mahabharata in the conversation between Yamaraj and Yudhisthira Maharaj. Honey, honey. Bhutani gachantiya Yamalaya. That everyone is dying. Yamalaya maybe is going to Yama or Yamaraj or death, you know, basically death. But Yamaraj is one of the Dwadasa Mahajanas. He's a good guy. So anyway, we see everybody going and we think, Kim Ascharya Dapuram. How wonderful it is that people are thinking they're not going to go. And I remember when I first joined not the material world, but I first joined the Hare Krishna movement. I don't remember when I first joined the material world. When I first joined the Hare Krishna movement, I was preaching to my brother, and I said, don't you understand? You're going to get old, you're going to get sick, and you're going to die. And he said, don't spoil it for me. It's just like, for example, if you go to a movie, and you're sitting in the movie, and you just tell the person next to you, this is what happens at the end. You spoil the whole movie. Just like if you're writing a review of a movie, I don't know if anyone's written reviews for movies, but we learned that when I was in the university. You don't give the ending of the movie, because nobody's going to want to see the movie, or you'll spoil the whole movie. So, people don't want the movie spoiled for them. And there's a very interesting story. We were telling this in regard to our class on Indian religions. There's a story of Lord Buddha, which is like one of the typical stories told, and it's hard to figure out, you know, what part is right, what part is wrong about this story. But anyway, the story is that when Lord Buddha was just a little kid, his parents heard from the astrologer that he was supposed to renounce this world and, you know, devote his life to spiritual activity. So the parents, either they were kings or rich people or whatever, they were very upset with that. And because in India, parents usually don't want their kids to renounce this world. Why? Why don't they want their kids to renounce this world? Well, it's very interesting. In the Indian system, the system of health care, you know, hospice and care for the aged is actually your children. It's hard for us to appreciate that in the Western world. Generally, in the Western world, when your parents get old, you know, you just send them to an old people's home. And then you see them once a year, right? But in the Indian system, actually, that's the old age insurance, that's the care, that's the hospice and everything like that. So, that's one reason. Another reason is that in the Indian system, people are very much concerned with reputation. And it's really not considered good, reputation-wise, to have your son take sannyas, because people think that your son joined the Hare Krishna movement just because, you know, he's crazy or something like that. So, for many reasons, you know, people are dissuaded from taking sannyas. Anyway, let's get back to Lord Buddha. So his parents were very upset. So what they did to try to entangle him was that they shielded him from the realities of life. They wouldn't let him come in contact with old people. That's hard to imagine how you do that. Or sick people, or dead bodies. And actually, probably they weren't able to do it so successfully, but the story is a different thing. But somehow or other, he realized that at a certain age, I think it was 26, yeah, 26, they actually got him married to a very beautiful wife. And at 26, he had this realization, either he left the palace and he saw some dead people or dead bodies, old people and sick people. And finally he realized, you know, this material world is a pretty miserable place. Because this is what happens with everybody. And then he went and he renounced the household life, renounced the kingdom at the age of 26, and engaged in very, very harsh austerities. And of course, after he engaged in harsh austerities, he realized that austerities were not, was not the process of self-realization, because when he was engaged in austerities, his hair fell out, and he had so many sicknesses that came from the austerities. So then he embarked upon what he called the middle path. Middle path means, you know, not too austere, not too much sense enjoyment. Of course, Krishna himself in the Gita advocates that path. He says, Mityahara Viharasya. He said, there's a middle path. Krishna, that's Krishna's words too. The yogi is not one who eats too much, eats too little, sleeps too much, sleeps too little, but one who is moderate in all these activities. That's the Bhagavad Gita. So, anyway, so by perceiving this birth, death, disease, and old age, one can have an impetus for renunciation, although it doesn't give you vairagya. It starts you on the path of vairagya. And let me explain what vairagya is. The word vairagya is composed of two words, raga and vai, or as described here, viraga. That's just another conjugation of the word. So raga, or raja, as most people pronounce it, means passion, right? The mode of passion. And vairagya means to be without passion. So it's not that by performing austerities you become detached from this material world. Although, when you hear about the miseries of the material world and you perform austerities, it may lead you to the platform of detachment. Because real detachment comes by Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga. Prayojita janayati asu vairagyam yanam cha yad ahaitakam, by performing service to Krishna. So, therefore, we may see someone who is extremely attached to this material world who is performing austerities. Just like the example of Visamrita Muni, right? You know the story of Visamrita Muni. Visamrita Muni was performing austerities in order to get weapons, power, to defeat Vasishtha Muni. It turned out that, you know, Vasishtha Muni had this desire cow. I mean, there's a whole story, I'm not going to tell the story. And Visamrita Muni tried to steal it, and then he was defeated by Vasishtha Muni, and his sons were killed by Vasishtha Muni, and his soldiers were killed by Vasishtha Muni. So he was performing austerities in order to get more material power. And that, he was very austere. In the same way, you have Hiranyakashipu performing austerities in order to get some material benediction, isn't it? So that's not renunciation, because it was all impelled by Rajagun. You understand? It was all impelled by passion. So that's not really renunciation. That's an austerity, but not really renunciation. Jai Shishi Panchatattva. So, on the other hand, you have devotees like Pundarik Vijaniti, and I think you know that story. Pundarik Vijaniti was living very opulently. He was the spiritual master of Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. When Gadadhar Pandit Goswami saw his opulent living, sitting on a bedstead, you know, a silk bedstead with chewing pan with jewelry all over his body, Gadadhar Pandit Goswami said, you know, was thinking, you know, how can this be a great devotee? Because he's, you know, he's living like opulently. But then later on, when a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam was recited by Mukunda, this Pundarik Vijaniti fell into complete ecstasy, kicked apart the bed, kicked apart all of his jewelry, and then Gadadhar Pandit Goswami understood his real position. So therefore, he was actually renounced from this world. So what is renunciation anyway? Maybe I should tell another story about renunciation, illustrating that same fact. Let's see, there was Pundarik Vijaniti. Oh, there's many great devotees, of course. All right, so let's talk about what actually renunciation is. Renunciation can be described by the word nirapeksha. Nirapeksha means disinterested. That's renunciation. Not that you're attached or attracted, and not that you're repulsed. Neither one of the two. And Prabhupada describes these as opposite sides of the same coin. Attraction and repulsion are felt by conditions. Well, Krishna also talks about this. So the question is, how can one become disinterested in this world? Whereas we find many devotees, in order to just like protect their, you know, brahmachari status or something like that, or tend to have a negative attitude towards things in this world. I remember in the early days of the movement, the brahmacharis would actually just call all the ladies in the temple Maya Devis. Prabhupada would call the ladies in the temple in the early days gopis. That's interesting, isn't it? Prabhupada would write a letter to the temple president or something like that and said, how are all the gopis doing? It's interesting, isn't it? Because we don't do that now. We don't say, you know, here's the gopi's ashram, here's the men's ashram. But still, devotees had a very negative attitude. I mean, I myself, when I was a brahmachari, I mean, I sometimes had a little bit of a chauvinistic attitude towards the ladies. One time I was in Los Angeles, and standing on line for prasadam, it was a brahmachari. And I, you know, in the line, there are everybody, men and women. I said, well, men first on the line, women second. Us men first. And I almost got killed that day. Because Los Angeles is Los Angeles. I don't need to describe what it's like there. Anyway, so people have this negative attitude towards things. You know, they just like, towards all sorts of things, they have this negative attitude. You know, someone talks about, let's say, movies or something like that. You know, things that are not really helpful or conducive to that spiritual advancement. So someone says, oh, the movies. Or the, what else do they talk about negatively? Chocolate. Or so many things they talk about in a negative way. The newspaper. Or computer, you know, sometimes even people come to me and say about computers the same thing. They say computers. Ooh, it's so mundane and material. Yuck. It was interesting, actually. I'll tell you a funny story. About mobile phones, they used to do that. I was the first Hare Krishna devotee to ever have a mobile phone. I'm just bragging about it. And it was bigger than the mobile phones nowadays, you know. Like this big game. So what happened is that, you know, I was at the GBC meeting and put the mobile phone in my bead bag. And all of a sudden it started ringing. It didn't have all the fancy rings that you have nowadays, you know. Now it plays Bach, Beethoven, chants Hare Krishna, and does all sorts of interesting things. But so all of a sudden the bead bag started going, ring, ring, ring. And the devotees looked at me, you're really in Maya. You're attached to this technology. Now, of course, everybody has two mobile phones. You know, sannyasi needs one for each hand. And computers, it was the same thing. So anyway, so we tend to have a negative attitude about things, and that, of course, makes us further attached to that very same thing. I mean, because there's certain stories that Srila Prabhupada told in that regard. And one story was, there were two sannyasis who were walking, and I think you know this story, and they came to a river, and there was a lady there, an older lady, who wanted to cross the river. And one of them saw the lady, and they carried her across the river. And the other one, as they walked further, because they didn't keep carrying the lady, that would have been too heavy, as they walked further, the second one, who had not carried the lady, was just like grumpy the whole way. Grumpy means he was just talking under his breath. He was going, ah, ha, 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 ha. Oh, this sannyasi, I can't stand it. This is nonsense. And so the first sannyasi who carried the lady across the river said, what's wrong, Prabhu? Oh, Maharaj. What's wrong, Maharaj? And sannyasi said, I can't stand it anymore. You carried across the river. And the sannyasi who had carried the lady across the river said, yes, I carried her across the river, but you've carried her about 20 kilometers. And there's the other story Prabhupada told, about the brahmachari who lived next to the prostitute. Anyway, and so the prostitute, and she had her office open, whatever. And customers were coming, and the brahmachari was saying, this is Maya, oh, this is Maya, this is illusion, this is Kali Yuga. Oh. And he was like, he had his little computer, and he was taking notes about every customer that came. You know, just a database. You know what a database is. He's keeping a database. And, So, actually, in the next life, he became a prostitute. Anyways, that's what he was thinking about. And she went back to home, back to Godhead. So, it's not to say the prostitutes always go back to Godhead, but this is a special case. So the point is that that's not going to make us detached, thinking negatively about things, nor thinking positively about things. So what actually makes us detached? And why are we not detached? This is very interesting. We can analyze that we're attached to this material world because we have certain needs, like the need for love. And we just don't know how to fulfill the needs. Our strategies are what's getting us attached to the material world. You understand? Let's say we have a need for love. We don't understand that you can have eternal love in relationship to Krishna. Or like Prabhupada said, you focus your loving propensity in Krishna, it goes on forever and ever and ever. We think we can fulfill our need for love by getting a pet, a chinchilla, or something like that. You know what chinchilla, anyway, it's a little furry little thing. Or, it's just like my brother, he had a, when he was young, he had a hamster. You know what a hamster is? And he used to kiss it all the time. Moochie! Isn't it? Actually, Prabhupada said, between different species, you can't really exchange rasas or tastes like that, you know. Why? Because the hamster is not thinking when you kiss it, I love you. The hamster is thinking, this smells bad. Or the dog, you know, everybody loves to kiss their dogs, right? The dog licks, you know. So you're thinking, my dog loves me. But as Prabhupada said, the dog is actually just tasting you because you have salt on your nose and different parts of the body. And Prabhupada tells an interesting story that when people die in India and there's no one to take care of the body, the dogs come and the first part they eat is the nose. Did you know that? Mmm, delicious. So the dog is thinking one thing and you're thinking another thing. So there's no rasa exchange, you know, there's no mutual rasa exchange between members of different species. It just doesn't happen. Whether you like it or not, that's life. That's life. And even between members of the same species, each one in the loving exchange, each one is thinking of satisfying themselves. So it's not real love. So in other words, there isn't love in this world. The closest thing, of course, is the love that a mother has for the child, as Srila Prabhupada said. But basically, it's more like me, 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 me. I got this need, this itch, whatever. And you're a good object to fulfill it. That's the love of this world. So to want love or to need love is not a bad thing. It's just your strategy. You understand? That's all. It's just a strategy. So we got to think like that. So yeah, what I want, what I need, not want, but what I need is good. Because that's natural. That's part of the soul. The soul needs love. The soul needs to be free. Like you may need freedom. And in the material world, you express your freedom in different ways. That really don't get you freedom. Like free to take drugs or free to, you know, go to the nightclubs at night. Or free, you know. Anybody have any other ideas how you express your freedom here? You stay up at night. You know, 'cause it really, anyway. Like devotees, sometimes they join them and they think fun begins at 10 o'clock at night. But actually, Prabhupada's instruction was fun begins at 4 o'clock in the morning. But you're thinking fun begins at 10 o'clock at night because it's an expression of freedom. That's why people like to stay up late. So you want freedom. That's all right. But you don't know how to get freedom. You get freedom by being freed from the modes of material nature. So all these different needs you have, love, freedom, you know, recreation. You think recreation is throwing a ball around with a bunch of gorillas? You know, soccer. So, or music, you know, all these things. Yeah, you need to have these things, but why not have them in relationship to Krishna? Then you can really enjoy. And once you have them in relationship to Krishna, then the happiness in the material world is, you know, just like insignificant in comparison. Of course, that's described in Bhagavad Gita as the higher taste. So in other words, permanent renunciation doesn't come from hearing about the miseries of the material world. It's an impetus. That means it may stimulate you to take spiritual life, but that doesn't give you permanent realization, vairagya, renunciation. It just doesn't work like that. In fact, if you keep harping on it, it makes you more attached. So in the beginning, it's good. So here we find Devahuti asking for it, you know, just so for the, and it's interesting, she says, both for me and for the people in general, so they can stimulate research into the absolute truth, you know, how to really become happy. But ultimately, we should take up devotional service, specifically hear and chant about Krishna, and then renunciation is quite an easy thing. But that means being absorbed internally in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or Krishna's various avatars. I mean, that's really how you achieve renunciation. So anyway, so I think we'll take questions here. Any questions, comments? Yeah.
We see that 20 years ago, there were so many devotees were so strict. For example, accordion, it was a taboo.
Maya.
Yeah. But now we see that not each and every temple, but it's enlarged, this phenomenon. But still, there are some devotees, you know, who they say the classical way is the most productive for our spiritual advancement. Even if many devotees, they are chanting more with some instrument, violin, and this music.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the standard?
What does Lord Chaitanya say? He gives six surrendering principles. And these are mentioned in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Does anyone know the six surrendering principles? Accept everything favorable. Reject everything unfavorable. What are the other ones? I got trouble with one of them. One I have trouble with is being meek and humble. But anyway, so to always believe the Lord is maintaining you. To always believe the Lord is protecting you. And the one I have a lot of difficulty with is of being meek and humble. It's hard to be humble when you're so great. Anyway, so and then no, but actually I am humble. I am. I really am really humble. Anyway, I know that's a contradiction. And then the final one, of course, is to have no separate interests other than the interests of the Lord. So anyway, let's go to the first one. To accept everything favorable. So what determines whether something's favorable in Krishna consciousness? As far as our movement, what determines is whatever encourages people to concentrate on the Shuddha Nam, you know, the pure name of Krishna. That's really how you make advancement. I mean, I think many of you have gone on the japa retreats, right? So what do you chant on the japa retreats? Nothing? Om Namo, what is it? Om Namo Shivaya. No, you're chanting Hare Krishna, right? Hare Krishna, japa. And so, sometimes there's some external adjustments that help us focus more on the japa. Bhaktivinoda Thakur even mentions that. He doesn't talk, of course, about accordions, I mean, obviously. But he talks about, he said, you know, if you're having trouble hearing, sometimes you can put cloth over your head, go in a dark place. So that's an external adjustment. You know, so therefore, if something helps us, I mean, in other words, it shouldn't divert our attention. That's the danger with music, too. I mean, just to give the opposite side of the argument. The music sometimes can divert us from the Maha Mantra. In other words, just like the sound and everything. Like that's why Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would usually have the worst singer chant the kirtan. Now, so the people wouldn't be attached to the material qualities. I mean, if we tried that, you know, I'd probably go running out the door and screaming or something like that. I mean, it wouldn't attract me to chant Hare Krishna. So I think it has to be approached on an individual basis. Whatever helps one focus more. I know when I hear your accordion and you're chanting because you're following the principles strictly and the accordion is used to accompany the holy name, not to just make a whole show in and of itself. You're not doing a solo for like 15 minutes on the accordion. Like that. Then I think, I mean, it has to be approached with caution. Because, see, the comments you hear from in India, where people get too much into the instruments sometimes, I'll tell you an interesting story. When I was in Mayapur one year with Srila Prabhupada, during the Mayapur festival, they actually had a kirtan competition. You understand? Maybe some of you heard the story before. And during this kirtan competition, there were all the Bengali groups coming and everything like that. And the Bengali people, I mean, there's wonderful devotees, but they really got into the instruments. They can play the mridanga so well, they can get it to chant Hare Krishna. They go, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Hare, like that. Anyway, so they could get it to chant Hare Krishna, and they were just like doing the show, you know, flipping the mridanga around and throwing it in the air, and you know, acting like Lord Chaitanya and rolling on the ground. And when Prabhupada saw that, he said, stop this nonsense. And they were just using the mridanga and cartels. You know, they weren't using harmonium or anything like that. So the idea is they were getting too much into the instruments, the instrumentation, and the whole point of being focused on the holy name was lost. So you can judge something by the result. Palena parachyate is the Sanskrit for that. That means the fruit. You can judge something by the fruit. So if people are becoming more enthusiastic to hear the holy name, not just to hear instruments, then that can be accepted. But if people are becoming more enthusiastic about instruments, that can't be accepted. I mean, just give you an example. The way most people, now you got me started. Anyway, the way most people play the cartels, got me started, I'm sorry, is like this. Oh my God, I can't even do it. Anyway, so what that does with me in the holy name, it makes me completely unenthusiastic to go to kirtan. And, you know, I put in double earplugs, my earmuffs, you know, whatever. And I still run out of the temple room. You know, so they're using cartels, but they're driving me away from the holy name. You understand what I mean? So the point is the result. What is the result of it, you know? People look too much at the ritual and not at the result. If you get too much into the ritual, you know, that is, you know, what you're supposed to do, how you're supposed to do it, the tradition, then you become involved in what we call Niyam Agraha. That is, you know, you're not thinking of why you're doing it anymore. It's just like the rituals. And it's almost like, you know, the brahmanas in the early days in the Vedic system, that they got so much into the rituals, they had to have a spoon for each particular type of swaha. Anyway, everything was timed so exactly, they forgot the purpose. And they became so ritualistic that there was a rebellion against these brahmanas. And that's one reason why the Jains, the Buddhists, and anyway, internal rebellion, which were the Aranyakas, which we described in our course, because they got too much into the ritual. So the point is, I mean, and Prabhupada, okay, let's take what Prabhupada did. Prabhupada has us play every morning the Govinda prayers, you know, the Chintamani, Prakara Sadmasu, etc. And then you have Western instruments playing there, don't we? You have a lady singing. You know, one, I remember in the past, you know, this was about renunciation, one sannyasi said we should never hear a lady singing. We shouldn't play the Govinda prayers anymore. And Prabhupada got very upset with this devotee. So look at that, the Govinda prayers are playing. Okay, another point, another example I had in personal experience is I was in Los Angeles one time, and right after Prabhupada gave the Sunday Feast lecture, and it's very interesting, that Prabhupada wanted to give the Sunday Feast lecture in an auditorium, not in the temple room, because he wanted to attract regular, what Prabhupada called ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if you know what ladies and gentlemen mean, but, you know, regular people. We're not regular, but anyway, regular people. Prabhupada wanted to attract, you know, the people, normal people. I guess we're normal. But anyway, I don't know how to express it. I don't want to say karmis because that's the wrong expression. But he wanted to attract people who weren't members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement. So normally, when you go to hear a lecture, go to hear some philosophical discourse, you sit in chairs. I mean, in the Western world, right? People are not accustomed to sitting on the floor. And I remember when I first joined the movement, I had to adjust myself to sitting on the floor. I don't know if any of you had that experience. You did. And it was painful in the beginning because, you know, I always sat in a chair. So sitting on the floor, you know, the knees and the, what am I doing here? So Prabhupada wanted an auditorium. And so they had an auditorium in the Los Angeles temple. And what they did, unfortunately, was to change that auditorium into the temple room against Prabhupada's instructions. The present temple room was that auditorium. Prabhupada was upset. When Prabhupada first saw that they had taken away the auditorium, he gave his famous lecture, and I was there too. He said, "My Guru Maharaj said to distribute books, you should be ready to sell all the marble from the temple." And that was Prabhupada's first appreciation of the new temple room in Los Angeles. Can you imagine? Your spiritual master was there too. I mean, he and I were there together at that point. I mean, you imagine you do something, work real hard for Prabhupada, you know, make a beautiful marble temple room, and the first thing Prabhupada says, "Yes, my spiritual master said you should be ready to sell all the marble and distribute books." Because they had actually disobeyed Prabhupada's instruction. Prabhupada had actually gotten a model of the whole temple and said, "This is where this should be, this is where that should be," and he wanted the auditorium there. So that's the first thing. So when Prabhupada was giving the lecture in the auditorium, then right after Prabhupada gave the lecture, then he had some devotee with a bass guitar get up. I think his name was Sachinandan or something like that. I don't remember. You know, one of my godbrothers. And he started playing a bass guitar. And a bass guitar is a lot heavier than an accordion, right? You know, amplified bass guitar. Boom, 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 boom. And he had him lead the kirtan. Everyone was going, boom, whoops, sorry. And everyone was going, Hare Krishna, and they were dancing next to him. Prabhupada liked it. Because they were dancing. You know, so I think that's the real point. You know, whatever gets us into the holy names, within reason, I mean, obviously, we can't say that smoking marijuana is going to help me concentrate more on the holy names. We had one devotee who did that. He got a little too far out. He said, you know, he was going into ecstasy, he would sit on the Vyasasan and cry for hours. Because he was in ecstasy. Not really. So, I mean, that's nonsense. But if it helps us develop, if we find, I mean, just like, for example, sometimes I was in Croatia, and in my little MP3 player, it's called an iPod. Anyone heard of an iPod? I loaded up these songs of a very nice devotee who chants. His name is Atmaram. You know Atmaram, right? With a guitar and everything like that. So, you know, he has nice songs like Shiguru Charana Padma and the Guru Vashtaka prayers and everything like that. And so, you know, I was putting them on every morning and I was just feeling so much, you know, not, I was feeling just like so connected to Prabhupada, you know, just like hearing the music and hearing the emotion and the devotion of the music. Because that's what you really hear, the emotion and the devotion. And then I was actually experiencing the meaning of the words just by hearing him. So it's not that I was in Maya, listening to a guitar. Whereas if I listened to Mick Jagger or something, I'd probably be in Maya. You understand the difference? So, and Prabhupada played the harmonium too. I mean, I know in the Gaudiya Math, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't have harmonium, but he was dealing with a different people, different circumstance, trying to get his sannyasis as renounced as possible. You know, there's different circumstances. I don't think we can apply the rules of the Gaudiya Math to the present ISKCON temples in the Western world. You know, Prabhupada did a lot of things that shocked his godbrothers, such as letting ladies do artis at the temple, or ladies give class. Or do, you understand? You know, so Prabhupada adjusted things according to time, place, and circumstance. And Krishna plays the flute too, you know. Are we going to ban the flute now too? Then poor Krishna will be out of the Hare Krishna temple if we ban the flute. So, anyway, my understanding is, you know, if we see the devotees encouraged to come to kirtan, is, you know, I know when you lead the prayers of Srila Prabhupada, Shiguru Charana Padma, Kevala Bhakati. So, I mean, actually, I can feel something in my heart, you know, stirring when you lead, because there's some bhakti there. I mean, that's the main thing. And also, I listen to Prabhupada's chanting. And Prabhupada's chanting, I mean, is ultimately this deep, unlimited bhakti in Prabhupada's chanting. So I think the whole point is the bhakti. And if something helps us hear someone who is chanting with bhakti, that's another thing. On the other hand, there's many expert chanters who are not Krishna conscious, not following the regular principles, or don't accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I don't advise devotees to listen to them. I mean, that's another problem that's come in our movement. I'm just trying to present both sides. And many devotees get kirtans by famous kirtan people, you know, or bhajan people who are not Krishna conscious. And the statement is, Sanatana Goswami quotes this statement, Vaishnava mukod girnam putam harikatam ritam shabadanayava kartavya. Sarpa chisti yatapayam. That one should not hear the Krishna's names being chanted or Krishna katha from those who are not Vaishnavas, in other words, following strictly. Because that will have adverse effects that will poison your Krishna consciousness. So I think this is my standard, the one I apply. So anyway, so I'm very happy to hear the accordion. I mean, wish you could open to an accordion school. And every temple we would have an accordion player. Unfortunately, it's not like that. I'm lamenting. I'm lamenting that I have to go back to some temple where there's no accordion player. I'm thinking maybe I should learn the accordion. I mean, I didn't. When I was young, I went to accordion school, but it would take me about another year just to pick it up. But then, anyway, so even I'm, you know, when I hear you play the accordion in my mind, I'm actually thinking, you know, maybe I should study again. But then I'm thinking, I got so many things to do. Oh my God. Another thing on my plate. Oh. You know, I got all these things I'd like to do. I want to learn Hindi so I can preach in India. I'd like to be in my GBC zone for a few minutes a year. So I don't have time for it. But basically, the impetus is there in my heart, my mind, even to learn or to have other devotees learn how to play the accordion. So, I mean, for me, it enthuses me. What can I say? And if someone plays the cartels, oh, yeah, I got to show you how to play the cartels. The way Prabhupada played the cartels was not, was more like, and watch, when Prabhupada played, I would watch Prabhupada when he played the cartels. But I can't do it exactly because I'll lose the cartels. But anyway, Prabhupada would have like his fingers would come out each time the cartels would hit. And it was so beautiful and it wasn't clashy at all. And it wasn't these giant whompers that just like destroy your brain. Literally. Did you know they, oh my God, I don't know if I should talk about these things. But anyway, so, In the army, they're discovering a weapon. It's called infrasound. Anyone heard about this? Infrasound. where it's these sound vibrations, very low frequency, like you get from certain instruments. How if you focus it, it actually turns someone's brain into jello. Literally. They can just focus it and just kill like one or two people, or, you know, turn them into zombies or something like that. So, I mean, sound, another point is that my godbrother Jayath Widmarsh did a whole study on the loudness of kirtans after he himself discovered that he has severe permanent ear damage. You know, he has this ringing in the ear. You know, sometimes devotees think, ringing in the ear, I'm hearing the kirtan all the time. This is ecstatic. Lord Chaitanya's kirtan, 24 hours a day. You know, you're hearing bells. Well, he did a study on it. And actually, that study, I have my computer, I can send it to anybody who wants. And he discovered that many devotees have permanent ear damage. And tinnitus is the thing that comes with the ringing. Ringing is one symptom of tinnitus. And we are continually being subjected to a decibel level that is higher than is allowed in a workplace by the government. In other words, if this was a factory, we'd have the government close us down. Decibels means levels of sound. So in the past, I have it in my home. I actually have this decibel meter. I learned it from Jayath Widmarsh. I mean, he's my older godbrother. So I would go into the kirtans and measure the decibels. And there was more than being on the runway right in front of a jet plane as it was taking off. Like that. And you see the people work on the runways and everything, they always have these ear protectors on. So anyway, that's another point about kirtans. The kirtan should be sweet, should be attractive. I mean, they can be enthusiastic. I mean, you can jump around like anything, which is nice. But it shouldn't be clashy. Or else later on in life, you're going to be experiencing ear damage. Even myself, I have partial ear damage in the right ear. So when people play the cartels, even regularly now, I feel pain all over my body. That's why I have to put an ear plug in, just in the right ear. And the left ear is pretty much all right. Leave that one alone for a while. But, you know.
What about this djembe?
Djembe drum? I think whatever, you know, that I think that's good for, you know, many people in here. It gets people dancing. Whatever, you know, Rathiatra and everything like that. I think if it gets too loud in the temple room, it can cause ear damage. And another point is one gets too attached to the rhythm or the instrument, it's not good. Whether it's the cartels, whether it's the mridanga, whether it's the accordion, whether it's any of the instruments, if it gets too instrumental and you get away from the holy names, that's really not what we're trying to get to. You know, we're just trying to chant Shuddha Nam. You know, when we're chanting, we should be thinking this is Radha and Krishna we're dealing with. Like that. So it's, I mean, the music is not the main thing, but it should be used to help us focus. That's the point. Anyway, so I think that the way you play the accordion helps me focus. I don't know about anyone else. You know, we can take a poll here. But it really helps me focus on the meaning. And the way Atmaram plays his guitar. Now he's one of my favorite musicians. And this is wonderful. I mean, when Vidyananda Maharaj went to the Bahamas, you know about the whole thing, he spoke to all these yogis about Srimad Bhagavatam. Or it was Mahabharata. It was actually the Mahabharata. Sorry. It was the Mahabharata. He was telling Mahabharata stories. He brought Atmaram with him to get everybody chanting. And everybody was chanting. Did you know this? So he brought Atmaram. So next time he can bring you. You can go to the Bahamas. Wouldn't you like that?
Not in this life.
No? Why not? Bahamas, you know, sun and ocean. And
maybe for this reason.
But Chaitanya went swimming every day. Right? Jagannath Puri. So, so he had everybody chanting. And another thing is because we find these other groups and people who are not Krishna conscious are using all these instruments, they become more famous chanters of Hare Krishna than we have. which is really, you know, wow, we're the first ones. As far as I know, we're the first ones to chant. I mean, Allen Ginsberg chanted, but he wasn't. You know Allen Ginsberg? No. I chanted with him in the early days. And he would chant. He didn't even know how to play the harmonium. He would just play one chord. You know, because he was always intoxicated. I was in Gainesville. He came to Gainesville and I played with him. Anyway, so and just play a drone. But a lot of people listen to him. What can I say? Allen Ginsberg. He was like the beat generation. Anyway, any of you heard of it? No. But anyway, he was playing just one chord the whole time. And but basically, we were the first, because Allen Ginsberg had gone to India too, and he had brought Hare Krishna back, but of course he didn't chant purely. But Prabhupada loved him very much, and he actually helped sponsor Prabhupada's first visa, you know, permanent visa from the United States. So he actually was an instrumental part in helping the Hare Krishna movement. And, you know, George Harrison too. So, you know, we were actually basically the first ones to really make Hare Krishna popular. Yet we have all these other people who are chanting and drawing crowds of 10,000 people at one time, you know, in New York. And then we go out and we're lucky if some little old lady gives us a euro or something. So, you know, what did we do wrong? It's not that we did anything wrong. And these other people, most of them are not devotees. If you ask them, do you believe in Krishna? No, Krishna, Shiva, you know, they're all the same. Some of them not even vegetarians. And I'm not criticizing anyone in particular. But, you know, and here we are, and we're left in the dust. And, you know, we lost, you know, it's like in surfing. In surfing, you got to catch the wave. Anyone here has ever surfed? No. No. What's wrong with all of you?
There's no sea.
There's no sea here. Yeah. Just see how unfortunate you are to be born in a country where there's no ocean. So when I was young, I was surfing. And so in order to surf, you have to catch the wave exactly at the right spot. Because if you don't catch it, if you're too late, then it just leaves you behind. And if you catch it, if you're too early, guess what? You get pushed down to the ground, or, you know, ground into the sand. I went into this one... Oh, what are all these stories coming out? Anyway, I went to this one beach with one of my disciples. His name was Mayapur. It was in Hawaii. It's called Makapu. And the waves were like up to there, the ceiling. He said, don't worry, Maharaj. Everything's Gurudev. Everything's all right. So I caught the wave a little bit too late, and then I was twirled around, smashed in the sand and the rocks, and I was praying to Krishna the whole time, and I said, that's the last time I'm doing that. So it's like when you're preaching, you got to catch different waves. So there's the kirtan wave, but just like we stood back, we didn't catch it. And the yoga wave, too. And we're starting to catch it. You know, some of us are starting to catch it. But, you know, really, we're coming up on the tail end of it. That means we didn't really catch it at the beginning. We could have taken advantage to popularize Krishna consciousness. So, definitely devotees should utilize their talents, their instruments, whatever, in preaching Krishna consciousness. I mean, and your accordion is wonderful. In Split, of course, Split, Croatia, they have this whole band, the mantra band. And many people come to the Sunday feast. They come just to hear and chant, and devotees get them chanting along with them, and it's nice. It's nice, you know, what can I say? It helps people come to Krishna. That's the main point. Valena Padachiyate, judge by the results. So I know, you know, this is not the most fanatical statement, but that's my particular understanding. You judge something by the results. How quickly people are becoming Krishna conscious. So any other questions or comments? Yeah.
Lord Buddha, when he realized that the path of extreme austerity is not true,
yeah.
He came to the middle path. Why is that he didn't... the middle path is just half a way somehow. It doesn't give a higher taste like bhakti or something. Why did he restrain himself because he was...
Well, he's an incarnation of Krishna. first of all. And it wasn't his duty to show Bhakti Yoga, was his duty to show Ahimsa Paramo Dharma. That Ahimsa was the topmost, Ahimsa, or nonviolence, is the topmost Dharma. So, anyway, so that's why he did what he did. He took the middle path, because he was teaching in that way, and he became self-realized under the Bodhi tree. It's his duty. Everybody has a specific duty. And it's also our duty not to be too austere, to accept as much as necessary to maintain this body, and not to accept any more. Right? That's renunciation. So any other questions or comments? Yeah.
But sometimes we desire things which we kind of need, but it's like a thin line, because
yeah,
the desire may be greater than the need.
Well, that's why we have the Devotee Association. So desire is not necessarily the same as a need. Desire is like a strategy to fulfill a need. The problem is that we're identifying desires with needs. When you can separate the two, then you can actually understand better, you know, what's the need. But because we equate the two, then we're confused. So we need the association of devotees. You know, you may say, I need to go to the movies. That's a desire. You're saying it is a need, but it's not a need. Nobody needs to go to the movies. I mean, what did they do like 200 years ago before there were movies? People still lived, right? Did anyone die because there were no movies? So you don't need to go to the movies. You desire to go to the movies. So then you can talk to your temple president, you talk to Ananta, and say, I'm desiring to go to the movies. And then Ananta will say, what is your need behind that? Well, I want to hear or see some interesting stories and some romance and, you know, just hear about all these, some wonderful, interesting things, you know, like killing and everything like that. And then Ananta will say, all right, here's a Krishna book. Fulfills the need, because that's your need. Your need is actually, you know, to be, you know, some variety in, like, you know, it is a need to actually hear about romance. You know, it is a need. But Krishna's romance. There is a need to hear about exciting things and competition, and hear about that in Krishna. So understand the need is different than the desire. But we confuse the two. You know, sometimes people say, yeah, I really need to get married. No, he may get married, that's another point. But it's not a need. It's a desire. So you analyze, you know, why do you need to get married? Oh, because I want to sleep late in the morning. And then I tell the story about the Brahmin and his underwear to that devotee. You know the story? I said the Brahmin, he wanted to avoid having a rat eat his underwear. So then he finally got a cat, and then he had to get a cow for the cat, you know, feed the cat milk. And then he had to get a wife to take care of the cow, and then he had to get a job to take care of the wife that took care of the cow, that took care of the cat that ate the rat. So, and he still wasn't happy. Anyways, so I may tell that story. So I said, look, if you just want to sleep late, you want to sleep more, okay. That's not a need to sleep late, but you may need to sleep more. Go to sleep earlier. Then you don't have to get married. Yeah, if you go to sleep at 8 o'clock at night, then you'll get enough sleep, you know, 8 hours. Then no need to get married, right? Wow, you saved me. Anyway, I'm just teasing about this. But it's not that, you know, it's not that people need to get married. They have certain needs that are fulfilled by the strategy of marriage. And in certain cases, that's a good strategy. I'm not saying that's a bad strategy. In certain cases, that's a good strategy. You understand? But we have to be able to identify the needs to determine whether the strategy is good or not. Is that clear? You know, if we have certain needs. Okay, what are the questions?
It is said in Kali Yuga the most important austerity is the austerity of Sankirtan.
Yeah.
So somehow by preaching and by engaging, austerities come automatically by the nature of service to us.
Yeah, we get
a... Do we have to look for other austerities like artificial or something like this? When
no.
By the nature of the Sankirtan mission, austerities will come to us.
Well, they come to us because we want or have a vision to do something. Not that they, you know, you're sleeping one day after you've gone on a whole day of Sankirtan and austerities come to you. I mean, you have to have like a vision or desire or a plan. Just like I mentioned before about, you know, certain austerities that I do that are not really austere. Just like last night, there was this nice, Likovan had a nice ice cream there, you know, with the little curls and soft ice cream and everything like that. And I was looking at that. I was thinking, should I? No, I... You know, very attractive, and the devotees were enjoying like anything. So then I was thinking, you know, I wasn't thinking, you know, ooh, ice cream, yuck. I was thinking, I immediately went to the goal. I mean, what's my goal? To serve Prabhupada as long as possible. And in order to do that, I have to follow a certain diet. And so, you know, to serve Prabhupada's mission, the Sankirtan mission, and then automatically there wasn't any desire to take the ice cream. It wasn't a hard thing. It's not that I had to go, oh, ice cream. And all night long I was dreaming, you know, soft ice cream. Maybe if I sneak with Lee Govinda today, without anyone seeing that I broke my diet, he'll give me his mercy. Anyway, so, not that I was thinking about that. I just thought, you know, this is the choice I made in life. Ekeha Kuru Nandana. You know, that's the point. You know that verse in Bhagavad Gita? Vyavasayatmaka Bhutya Ekeha Kuru Nandana. And then Bhavashatra Sranantascha. That if people have a purpose in life, then you can do amazing things, you know, austerities. Even if you're not completely Krishna conscious, if you have a purpose, you know, something that you really goal that's important to you, then other things, it's just like when you're focused. If you have a camera, if you focus the camera, you know, a good camera, not the cheap camera. If you focus the camera on one thing, you ever seen a picture where they focus on a rose? And everything in the background is completely blurred. So that's really what it is. That if you're focused, even if you're not Krishna conscious, and I'm not claiming to be Krishna conscious, but I'm focused on serving Prabhupada. You know, that's my focus on serving Prabhupada, serving Govardhan. And so, you know, it's just a very narrow focus. It's like I focus on one person, you know, like Krishna Das, and I just see him now. All the rest of you have disappeared. You're non-existent for all intents and purposes. You know, when I go like this, because that's him. So that's Vyavasayatmika Buddhir Ekeha Kuru Nandana. That when you're focused like that, then the other thing is not important. Yeah, there may be ice cream cones dancing around me or something like that. Or Gandharvas, you know, all around me. Apsaras, I'm sorry. Gandharvas are another thing. Apsaras, like that all around. But you know, just focus. You don't even see that, you know. Because it's like Arjuna. Another example is Arjuna, right? You know the eye of the bird example? Arjuna was asked, you know, what when you aim your bow at the eye of the bird, you know, well, what do you see? Everyone else was saying, you know, I see you, teacher, I see the tree, I see the bird, I see this, that, and that. And Arjuna didn't see anything except for the target. You understand? So that's Krishna consciousness. If you're like that, if you have a goal, that's renunciation. You know, the goal is to serve Krishna, be Krishna conscious, to please Prabhupada. And so we focus on that. That's the way I do it. And even in the material world, that applies. If one has a goal to make money, they can be extremely austere. Hiranyakashipu had a goal to be powerful. And he was able to do amazing things, more than any devotee I've ever seen. Has any devotee here ever been able to live in the marrow of his bones while the ants have eaten away his skin? Can you do that? No. Why not? So because he had that goal, so my understanding, my experience is if you're goal-oriented, and the goal is Krishna consciousness, of course, I'm not advocating that he's a goal, then you don't really notice austerities. Like it says, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they would, you know, rest for maybe a half hour, an hour a night, and some nights even not that, eat a little pat of butter, you know, every day or two, or buttermilk or something like that. So it's not that they were just thinking, you know, oh, to be Krishna conscious, I got to do this. Butter, no, whatever they, you know, no glove jamans, no this, no that. They were just thinking, you know, in ecstasy, you know, we have a goal of pleasing Krishna, we have to write these books, we have so many things to do. Even Sanatana Goswami was so focused on his goal, his of writing spiritual literature, then when Madan Mohan asked for better prasad, better bhoga, he said no. He even refused the Lord because he was so focused on his goal, right? Let me tell that story. That Madan Mohan was hanging from a tree, the deity of Madan Mohan was hanging from the tree, and he said, you know, can I have some salt? You know, he's giving him dried bread bowls. Didn't even cook him, just put him in the sun. You know, you take some dough, put him in the sun. Okay, here, Madan Mohan, here's your bhoga offering. And so Madan Mohan says, you know, what is this? You know, some salt at least? And Prabhupada tells the story several times, but in very, very funny ways. And then Sanatana Goswami answers, you know, now you're asking for salt, then you're going to ask for sweets. You know, I've been given this duty by Lord Chaitanya to write Vaishnava literatures. I don't have time for such a thing. If you want salt, you've got to get it yourself. So in other words, he was so focused on his duty that he was able to say no to Krishna. That's pretty cool, isn't it? And that's focus. And then Krishna made, got salt for himself, a whole boat full of salt, you know. And he built his own temple, you know, the Madan Mohan temple. So that's really, so we have to find some Krishna conscious goals. This is the end of class pretty soon. We have to find some Krishna conscious goals that we can be focused, that we're enthusiastic about according to our psychophysical nature. Something that really inspires us, enthuses us. And just, if you're doing that, then easily eating, sleeping, mating, defending, just not even important to you anymore. You understand? Something you really like to do for Krishna. Like your Harinam, isn't it? Like you're going on Harinam. You know, you're just, you love it. I can see it. Isn't it? I mean, it's like, for you, it's sweeter than glub jamans or nectar. Or, I mean, you're out there, it's just like, and I mean, I can see, you know, his eyes are turned upwards like he's in trance, you know. You can't even see the eyes when you're looking at him chanting. Did you ever notice that? You know, the pupils, that's called the pupils. It's, all you see is the white. That, because I'm trained in these things, that is a sign of trance. That's a sign of trance. When someone's eyes are focused on, that's why the yogis, they would focus on the third eye. Did you know that? When they focus on the third eye. then you didn't see the pupil anymore. So here's a yogi, you know, he's just like absorbed. You know, I'd love to have him in every temple. You know, you're so fortunate. You got the greatest wealth in the whole world. You know, someone who's like a yogi. Yogi namapi sarvesham bhajgatenan duratmana shadavan bhajate yomam samayuktatam omataha. You know, wow. You know, wow. You know, I'd love to, you know, I'd take him with me if you'd let me. But I can have anyone else from the temple except for him. But anyway, so you're absorbed. So you don't notice it. I mean, I'm sure you eat sweet bowls sometimes too. But anyways, but the main thing is the Harinam, isn't it? If I said to you, this sweet ball will keep you from doing Harinam, you'd give a sweet ball like that, isn't it? So that's the point of renunciation. Like that, you give it up. Because it keeps you from your from what you really like to do. So we all should be doing something we really like to do for Krishna. That's different. You know, somebody likes to be a temple president, like Ananta, so... See? Krishna spoke. Anyway, so... You know, another person, you know, may like to do the accounting for Krishna. You know, they like that sort of stuff. Whatever, different natures, there's different gunas and karmas. See, just do it for Krishna and be happy and be blissful. Do what you're doing. And Arjuna was advised by Krishna in the Gita to follow your own nature and serve Krishna in your own nature. And he was absorbed. But if Arjuna was told to be a Brahmin, he would not have been absorbed. He would have just saying, what am I doing here, you know? Where's my weapon, you know? You know, if you're trying to chant Hare Krishna, thinking, you know, bow and arrow, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I can't control my mind. Krishna, Krishna, bow and arrow. What else? Brahmastra. You know, so you have to be practical. Okay, I think we have to end time for prasadam. Anyway, so... All glories is Mangri, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada.